oh, I'm saying I don't want to do this because I don't know the outcome. Like, I'm scared of the outcome. Like, once I identify why I say I'm not going to ever try something, it's because I'm usually scared of the outcome. And that's when I actually want to go and try it. So, like, of course, like, moving, like, it's horrifying. Like, what's going to happen? It's like, okay, well, just try it because, like, who knows? Like, who knows what's going to happen? It could be a bad worst case scenario. It could be a good case scenario. And you never know. But, like, it's definitely those types of people that don't like to get outside of their routine. They don't know any better.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Sierra Carter. Sierra is a friend. Met her at Podcast Movement a couple of years ago. We've been on each other's podcast. She's returning because she did something that I thought was rather amazing. That she was living in Florida, running on the beaches and the nice sunny weather. And this summer she decided that she was just going to pick up stakes and move to Utah. She wanted to move to the mountains. So I thought that's really unusual because most people don't just move for no reason. In fact, most people who move are forced to and often have a lot of mindset adjustments they have to make just to adapt to a new situation. But Sierra chose to do this on her own, to just pick up stakes and move. And I wanted to kind of talk with her about the mindset that she has around that and the ability to be that flexible. Sierra is also a mindset coach, and so she's practicing what she preaches. Hope you enjoy my conversation with Sierra Carter. You've been on, I think you may be tied with
one other person as the number of times you've showed up on the podcast.
Yes. So, I love it. I love being back.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, and you and I have kind of, we met at Podcast Movement and, we've kind of, you know, collaborated on some things on some podcasts and tell a little bit about your history as a runner. Well, you've run like multiple more races since the last time you were on the show. So talk a little bit about how your running is going.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just finished the New York City Marathon, which was, I mean, to be personally honest with you, like, it wasn't my best marathon. It was my 15th marathon, but like, it was a solid marathon. I'll give it that. So do as I say, don't do as I do, right? I walked.
We always do that. I mean, that should be your freedom as a coach to tell other people what to do, and then you do something totally different.
So, like, most coaches will say, rest, don't walk around the days before a race too much, eat well, do this, do that, right? Well, my best friend and I calculated at least 13 miles on average Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So it came out to like 40 miles. Together walking around New York City. My legs were aching so bad walking around New York City, and I had to run a marathon on Sunday. So I was going into this race like almost like completing a couple half marathons and adding up to an ultra. I'm going to walk away with like 60 plus miles after this race. And you know, mile two, I knew my legs were dead and I knew this was going to be a long race. So I just went out and enjoyed it. I just had fun. I just smiled. I waved to the crowds. You know, we always have that between mile like 16 and 20 where we kind of contemplate why we're even runners. And I contemplate everything in my life. And I'm like, what brought me here? Like, what did I do wrong in my life that I'm here running the streets of New York? And then towards the end of the race, you're always like, this is amazing. I can't wait to sign up for another one. Like, I'm so lucky to be here. That's kind of how New York went. I also think it was a solid race. It wasn't like my favorite race because Chicago, I just did it that a month ago. So not only have I worn out my legs a couple days before this race, I wore them out a month before. And the month prior to that, I did another marathon. And between all three of those marathons, Chicago was the best one. That was the one I went off of effort freely. I got like a 3:37 of just going out there and having fun and just loving life in Chicago. And then New York kind of hit me in the face because it was hilly. The big Cottonwood marathon that I did in September, it was all downhill. That annihilated my entire life. Downhill marathons are not easy at all. So it was like the past three marathons, they've been a lot of fun. I've had a great one. I've had a solid one. And then I had one that was like made me question everything. And that was the big Cottonwood. But other than that, like running's been doing great. I feel stronger than ever. I've really been focusing on a lot of nutrition. I've been focusing on recovery. I think that's the biggest thing I added in cryotherapy. And that has made all the difference.
Wow. So, okay. There's, I mean, you said a lot of stuff there I wanted to ask you about. I want to get back to cryotherapy, but downhill running, what's so hard about that? I mean, a lot of runners who would like, yeah, it's all downhill. That should be
this downhill race. Oh my gosh. I kid you not. So I went out for it because I thought I could qualify for Boston with it again.
Well, yeah, that sounds like a great strategy. Mm-hmm. It's like,
great.
It's go downhill. It's, qualify for
Yeah. Rest. So like, that's what I thought, but this was, okay. So it started at 9,000 feet elevation, at the top of Big Cottonwood Canyon in Salt Lake City, Utah. Mm-hmm. And it went down, it ran all the way down to the city and it ended at like 4,000 elevation. I think it was a 5,200 foot drop.
In 26 miles. That's not much.
Yes. Right. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a great race. Like it's going to be fine. I've never been in so much pain. At mile 8, my calves cramped up. I thought it was my thighs. So I'd been doing a lot of squats. I've been working on a lot of things thinking, oh, my thighs, what could possibly hurt in a downhill race? And I had trained some downhills, not as much as I needed to, obviously. But I thought I was ready. I was flying. I think I had like a 6:57 pace for the first 8 to 10 miles. Mm-hmm. I started getting at like the 7:30, 7:40 pace around 12 to 14, 15, 16, all the way up to about 19 miles. And it just hit me like a wall. Like your body ached. Everything on your body hurt. The arches of your feet, your calves. My calves were probably the worst. I couldn't flex my foot anymore. And while I was running, I could no longer flex my foot. It was like I was hitting flat footed and I couldn't propel forward. So mile 19 through 26, I was walk running it in so much pain. And the sad thing was I wasn't alone. There were so many people around me that we were all flying together and we just came to this jolting stop. Like we've just like hit this wall. We crashed right into it face first in the asphalt. And we were looking around at each other like, are you doing okay? Well, there's no, like nothing about this race was okay. And I know a few people that came from stress fractures and we all had the same goal was to go qualify for Boston. Cause we thought, this will be the best one. I think it's rated the top, like fastest marathon. Like it's in the top three of the fastest marathons to qualify for Boston. Mm-hmm. But that is if you can probably run the course every single weekend. And I could have done that. I just didn't know to do that. But I walked away from that uninjured. But my body for the next 10 days, I couldn't walk correctly for 3 days. I could barely stand for the first 3 days, actually. Like you would see me stand and my legs would quiver and I would just almost like fall over. I was useless. I mean, I've never been in that much pain. Like today, I could go for a run after New York. And New York, my legs still kind of hurt. I've never been in so much pain after this marathon. I signed up for cryotherapy. I did red light therapy. I did massages. I did everything because I was so scared. I was even getting like lactic acid buildup. I mean, it was bad. I felt like I got hit by a bus and it ran over me twice.
Well, and that's interesting that, you know, you said you hurt everywhere. So you couldn't really identify. I mean, you know, normally, you know, when you runners have pain, it's in a specific spot. You're like, absolutely. I'm doing this wrong. So that you have some idea about maybe how to correct it, but you said that this hit your entire body all at once. So you know, did you have any idea about why this happened? I mean, and then it happened to like a whole bunch of other people. That just sounds interesting. That
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, I mean, personally, I think the only thing I could have done differently in this race was if I trained on this exact course. Okay. There was no amount of resistance training. There was no amount of like just regular hill training that I could have done differently that would have made everything not hurt as much. I mean, I know people that did the half marathon and they came away just as like broken. And it's really because that downhill grade was pretty steep. And if you're hitting, I guess your body is like contacting the ground at a certain angle and you're not used to it. Your body's just like, I can't do this. This is a lot. Like gravity's against you. Everything's against you. I think the arch in the foot was what's really funny. I think it was I'm trying to think now which foot hurt. One of my feet hurt and it was in the arch and it was something I had never experienced before in my life. I know three other people that had this exact pain that couldn't believe. They're like, what is this? This has never hurt. So I feel like that has to do with something with the grade and the incline to the side or downhill something, you know, like it's all about that. Like, again, like if I go back and do it, I have to be running this downhill all the time, like every single weekend just to get used to it.
Yeah. And I know I've been thinking just some of the, you know, as you're talking, some of the downhills that I run, you know, there is a little bit of, I mean, you have to kind of flow with the downhill, but there is a little bit of kind of holding yourself back. So you don't, you know, you don't get you don't run away from yourself basically.
Yeah, no. And I think, I don't know. I feel like the first like 5 miles, the coach said something really good. I went to the expo the day before and he said he's run it like 5 times. And he said something like, just take what the downhill gives you and take what the uphill gives you. Because what, you know, in this race, it was like a little bit of downhill and there was an uphill. And I was at like mile like 19 to 21. And that sucks. Like if your body's going downhill and it goes uphill, your body's like, I can't do this. Like what are you doing? But he had said, just take what it gives you. Don't try to force the downhill and don't try to force the uphill. And I really like that. So I went with that the day of the race where I was like, I'm just going to take what the downhill gives me. And you feel free. Like it's like, if I can describe it in a feeling, it's that free feeling where you're just letting your legs, you don't care about the pace, the turnover. You're not watching your watch. You're not pushing yourself. You're just lost in thought running down this hill. And that's what I did. But I'm telling you right now, it still hurt just as bad.
So you said you did cryotherapy and red light therapy. So
yes.
What does that do for me? I know somebody who's done cryotherapy, but he never really, he just kind of said he did it. So explain.
Yeah.
What is the advantage of doing cryotherapy?
Well, so cryotherapy, yeah. I think, gosh, the science behind it, I know it's really, really good for inflammation, right? Where it's the red light therapy is like, it helps. I should say this scientifically, but I'm not very good at explaining it.
But like, well, it's not really good. I mean, it's recovery. Like, what do you remember? What do you remember from what they told you?
Yeah. No, so it really helps the inflammation and reduce the inflammation and the soreness. So, I mean, what I personally think, if you've ever run a cold marathon versus a hot marathon, colder marathons, your body feels like it's not as inflamed as fast, right? Where you feel better running in the cold. Whereas in the hot, like you're just like one entire like flame of inflammation, of heat, of everything. And that's what I get from the cryo. Now, I personally think more benefits come from the cryo. I don't really know about the red light therapy. I feel like that helps my mood rather than my muscles. But cryotherapy, I went and did it yesterday after the New York race. It's like magical. You go in there, you let the blood, it like restricts your blood vessels. And then all of a sudden, when you step out of the machine or cube or whatever they have you, and there's so many different cryotherapy machines, all the blood starts rushing to your muscles. That helps nutrients get to your muscles. That helps blood flow. I mean, it brings oxygen. It just helps recovery and speeds it up. And I personally think, I swear by that, honestly, now I will always do cryotherapy after a race. I think it helps tremendously, but you do have to prepare. Nobody told me that you're in like this cube for 2 minutes. I started at 2 minutes at negative 166 degrees. Now you do have wear slippers and mittens because your extremities get cold, but it's cold. It is not just, oh, this is a great recovery method. This is a lot. Like that's cold for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've heard. And they used to use liquid nitrogen.
Right, come here.
They used to use liquid nitrogen. Now they use something else. I know that. You know, but and you know, when I've heard cryotherapy, I was like, you know, I saw Star Trek and Star Wars. you know, Star Trek was the one they always did the, well, Star Wars too. They had the, you know, the cryogenic therapy or the cryogenics, you know, where they'd freeze people you know, keep them alive for thousands of years or whatever. And so when I hear cryotherapy, that's my first thought. It's like, oh yeah, you're going to freeze me into an icicle.
Well, I think it really depends on where you go, like the liquid nitrogen. It really depends, because I've seen people sit in buckets where their head's above and they like sit in like almost like a tub for two mm-hmm. minutes. The one I go in, you're like fully submerged. It's almost like a chamber. I mean, there's so many different ones. I can't tell you if it uses all different different elements, but I think it's just different all around.
Okay. But yeah, the idea is that it's, you know, negative, you know,
it's cold.
Negative a bunch.
Mm-hmm. It's cold. And I feel like everyone that does it doesn't talk about how cold it is, which I think is funny. I'm like, why didn't you guys say anything? And they're like, oh, well, if you say anything, people don't do it. And I'm like, okay, so I signed up for this. I mean, I was desperate. The day I signed up for it, I was almost in tears. I was in so much pain. And just, you know how you get sick from like lactic acid? Like it's not like a cold, but you're just sick. Like you're tired, you're worn down, you can't think straight, like you're not moving or functioning. I was so at that point where I was like, I will try anything. Every step hurts. Like just get me some kind of relief, take the edge off of it. And it did. It really did.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's, you know, that's kind of what I had heard about from people who had experienced it, that it was extremely cold and that it worked.
Come here, so, baby. Yeah, no, absolutely agrees.
So red light therapy, is that a full immersion in red light as well? I mean,
yeah, so they have these two panels. I really like red. I like red light, but not really. I don't think I felt anything better with my muscles, to be honest with you. But it does mimic sunlight where it helps your mood. And I stand in these two panels. And you stand between them and you can strip down as much as you want, as little as you want, but it only works on bare skin. So, you know, if you want the full effect, they say you should strip down, like they're like, go in your birthday suit and you're in a room. So nobody sees you. And there's two panels, like about ankle to like 6 feet tall width or height. And you stand there for like 12 minutes and then I go and stand in cryotherapy. So I kind of do both back to back. You're supposed to do red light and then cryotherapy. I just think it's most effective for my mood. I definitely do it for my mood. Now that I've moved to Salt Lake City, because it's dark and cold here and I don't think I've seen the sun for a couple days now. I need the sun back.
Well, and yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, is that you moved from Florida. Was, you know, besides being flat, you know, it was sunny, but you moved from there to Utah, to Salt Lake.
Yes.
So, and then, you know, were you forced to move? I mean, it was like something most people, when they do that kind of a move, it's like, oh, well, you know, my job transferred me, or it's like, what was it that led to your move?
Yeah, no, it's kind of funny. Let me start at the beginning. So when I lived in Florida, I loved when I moved to Florida. Like moving, I think, is something that I think everybody needs to experience at least once in their life. I know a whole lot of people who have grown up in their town and they will not leave their town. And like, that's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. I just, once I moved once, I didn't want to be that person that was stuck in the same spot again. And I felt like I was in Florida. I was at a point where I grew up here after high school. So I lived in New Mexico, moved to Florida. And for 8 years, I was in Florida and I kind of hit that ceiling. Like I didn't really know what to do unless I moved somewhere new in Florida. And I didn't really want to do that because the weather, like we always say, like the weather never changes. And sometimes neither do the people. It's kind of the same vibe all across Florida. And that's what my best friend and I say, that because I went back to Florida and still nothing had changed. Like people are still doing their own thing. But I just felt like I needed something different. And I always told my best friend this year, I was like, you know, I just feel like I'm just not going to spend the rest of this year in Florida. And she's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I just can't see myself staying here much longer. Like I'm at a point where I want growth. I want new people. I want to push myself. I want to make myself uncomfortable. Like no matter how much I'm like cursing at myself later, I needed something different. And so I looked into Colorado and I wanted to go back to the mountains since I grew up in New Mexico. Wasn't going to go home, wasn't Arizona's not really my like cup of tea. Like people love Arizona. I'm not a desert person. I wanted to go to like Colorado mountains, but Colorado's so expensive. I could not, mm-hmm. couldn't afford that. Like even with 10 jobs, I still think I'd come out behind. And so I came here to Salt Lake City. Now, to be honest with you, I was lucky enough where a lot of the things I did for work, it was transferable. I had a little bit of a rollover with clients at that time, where they were able to go online. Like my online clients stayed online. I did lose a lot of in-person clientele, and that does hurt. But you know what? I'm young. I had two cats at the time. Now I have a puppy. I had two cats. I didn't have much to lose. Like I can go start over anywhere. I can go get a job. I can figure something out. Like I didn't really care at that point. I was like, you know what? I'm heading out. I don't really care. I don't know where I'm going to end up. I don't know what's going to happen. It was kind of exciting. Like some people fear the unknown. I really embraced it and got excited about the unknown because it was like, oh, where am I going to be in a month? I don't know. Like I could be back in Florida. Like I could really not like this and go right back to Florida. And like I had a safe bet that way. But at the same time, I was just so ready for something new. And like that whole year prior, I had been kind of experimenting with going off. And I mean, I guess I got lucky with COVID prices on airlines. I was traveling a lot by myself. So I knew how to talk to new people. I knew how to kind of like find my way around, figure out new things. And that's super exciting. So when I was able to confidently know I can make friends, I can talk to new people, I can do well in a new space, that's when I got really excited and I moved to Salt Lake City.
So how did you settle on Salt Lake City you kind of settled on Utah. Yeah. Was Salt Lake City just kind of like the main city there that offered the best opportunities, or did you like explore other areas?
Yeah, well, so I had been coming to Utah. My best friend used to live in Logan, which is about an hour and a half from me outside of Salt Lake City. And I knew Utah itself. Like I knew the mountains were right next to the city, and I think that's gorgeous. I personally stayed here because I feel like a lot of the other places in Utah are very – like they're very small townish. And if I wanted to go out and like build something and make something of myself, I didn't feel like a small town was going to work for that, which is some people love it. I didn't really want to go back to a small town, but I didn't want to live in a city. I'm not a city person. I need nature. I need space. I need people to not be around me 24/7. So I stuck in like Southern Utah or Southern Salt Lake City, which is like Draper area, Bluffdale, if anybody's extremely familiar with it. I love it here. It's growing fast. That's my only like gripe about it. People are finding Salt Lake City. They are realizing it's really gorgeous out here and they're moving here too. And we're like, no, you should stay where you are. Like it's beautiful out here. But that's kind of how that was settled, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's cool. So you decided that this was a place for you. And you settled there. You said you meet people. How do you find, you know, when you go into a new place, that's often a big deal. Cause I mean, I think a lot of the reason people stay, you know, I think there's statistics that people tend to live their entire lives within 5 miles of, you know, wherever they're, you know, and I noticed that even transplants. I mean, I live here in Kansas City and there are people who live in Overland Park, which is, you know, a suburb of the Kansas in the Kansas City Metro, and they never travel much more than, you know, to their work is within 5 miles or eight, and they never go anywhere else. They just stay right in that neighborhood. And how did you get involved in a community? I mean, did you find other runners? What I would call a community.
Yeah. So, okay. I honestly, this sounds crazy. I started on Facebook. I, just like looked up different communities in Facebook, like runner groups. I looked on networking groups, things like that. Like I knew it was going to be difficult because when I moved to Florida, my network was school. Like I went to high school. Like that's how I figured people out. Like that's how I met people. And it's a lot easier when you're in school to do something like that. And I've realized, and then coming here, it was honestly just meeting people through people. Once I got into these groups and I would tell people my interest. And I think the biggest thing that helped me was come up with a story. Not like a made up story. That sounds bad. These people don't know who I am.
That does sound bad.
But like come up with a story. Like, what are your interests? who are you? Why did you move here? Like, those are the things that people always, always, always ask you. And it's like, what do you do? Like, those are the things that people always ask you. Solidify those. So you're not just being like this, like sketchy, oh, this is what, you know, like kind of stammering when they ask you, because I guarantee you, when you talk to people, and I try to help people too, when you talk to people and you know yourself and your interests, they also probably know somebody else similar and they refer you, and you start kind of creating a network that way. And I have found that's probably the easiest way. Like, you have to be open. Don't be a closed book and be like, people don't need to know who I am. People like connecting other people. And if they don't, like, that's just, you know, that's not your person. That's fine. But people like connecting other people with like same likes. And they're like, oh, I know somebody, my friend does that. And then you start building a network off of that. And I think that is the best way if you go anywhere, to any event, anything, just be open and tell people. Now, again, like I said, create that story. You don't have to tell everyone everything about yourself. Tell people things about yourself that you want other people to know. That's my word of my, I guess, word to the wise.
Yeah. Some people need to learn that on Facebook. Yeah.
Right? Not everything has to be broadcasted. Like, that's why I come up with the story prior.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. I'm part of a business club in Kansas City where, I mean, it's more than just networking. I mean, there are networking events, but there's a lot of people, and the club tries to teach people this, but they don't seem to get it. As that, you know, when you're at an event, don't try to sell to the people at the event, because that, I mean, just people try to sell me. You know, they want to have coffee with me to sell me on whatever they're doing. And I'm like, I'm not your customer. I'm not your client. I mean, it's like, I mean, just, I know from talking to them that I'm not a good fit for them. And it really is a waste of their time and mine. And I decline those, but the thing is that most of us know, you know, 50, 100, I don't know. I can't remember the exact stats, but we know a lot of people. And so it's, you connect with people and, you know, you just connect on a personal level as people. And then they will then refer you to people they know that you can serve and who do need what you have to do. And it's just like, even though they say this over and over and over at the business club, it's like so many people don't, I was like, aren't you listening? Can't you get this? And so, and that's, you're saying the same thing, is you're telling your story and you're not necessarily, it's like the person that you may not have any synergy with the people that you're right there in that group or whatever, but they may know somebody is like, hey, you know, I met this person who did this thing and she runs, and you know, they may know other runners.
Right. And I think it's so funny because there's so many people, and I've talked to them, they're like, why do you have to just tell everybody everything? Like, my mom is the first one to yell at me. She's like, you just tell everyone everything, or you broadcast everything on Instagram. No, I broadcast what I want people to know on Instagram, because I can't even tell you how many doors Instagram has opened where it's just like, oh, somebody knew me from, because I posted some random story on Instagram and they said something about me to another person. And that person's like, hey, I want to talk to her, you know, and I've done the same where I'm like, oh, I should look this person up. You know, you should be open. You should be able to connect people, and you should also do it in return, where if you know somebody, I always try to link people up and be like, hey, you should talk to this person, you know, because I think they're an awesome, you guys would be an awesome fit, collaborate, whatever it is. Or like, if you have questions, maybe they have answers. And it's funny that so many people are very shut off to it, or they're very just business to business. They don't want to deal with you unless you want to talk to them or buy from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's unfortunate, because we've become that kind of transactional society. I mean, I see a lot of people having that attitude, and it's like, there are still people out there who really are real people. And I mean, it's like, if you're on LinkedIn, that's become like the Tinder dating site. I don't know. I haven't been on Tinder, but from what I hear of, you know, that just people hitting you up for, you know, can I sell you my thing? And it's because it's business people. And, you know, it's like, no, that's not, you know, even online, it should be who, you know, if you know who I am and what I do, you might know somebody who might need my assistance.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny, because I think the best connections come that way. Cause it's like, oh, how do you know this person? Oh, so-and-so referred me. And you sometimes make the best connections that way. And like, it works with friendships too. I just feel like, again, we live in a transactional society where if there's nothing in it for you, you don't do it. Mm-hmm. And I think I just get kind of sick of that because I like helping people. And like, I guess like what's in it for me is like just the joy of helping people and like being able to connect to people. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong.
So do you find groups of people who are people who are closed? They have a circle of friends that they're comfortable with and know, and they really, it's like, they're not interested in you know, even talking to anybody else that, you know, might do something socially. Yes.
The first time I'd ever heard that was actually in Florida. There was this one, I was like friends with them for a little bit. And then I just, I don't know. It was just a different feel because they're the type of people where I think some of those girls only took two trips in their whole entire life. They're like 25 now and they didn't go anywhere. They don't want to go. They don't want to move. They don't want to go anywhere. And they had the same friends since kindergarten. And I remember this girl saying, "Well, you're my newest friend." And we were moving into college. And I was like, "I'm your newest friend." She's like, "Yeah, you're my newest friend. I don't trust anybody else." And only the people she grew up with. And I was like, "Whoa, I don't think I could ever do that, to be honest with you." Like, good for her. She's kept the same friends. But I'm just not good at that mindset. Like, I just like to be friends with everybody. And so when I moved out here, I feel like there's a little bit of that out here. If people know Utah, it's like Mormons, Church of Latter-day Saints, like that's an extremely prevalent thing out here. And people are very close-knit. And in that case, I feel like it's sometimes harder to be closer to people, but they don't just shut you out. They'll still talk to you. They'll still, you know, ask who you are and things like that, but they're not as open. If I guess like I'm not part of the church, my best friend is, but I'm not. And, you know, outside of that, like it's okay, but I don't run into that as often when I'm not around people that aren't in the church. People out here are they just moved here. So it's like two different divides. Like Utah is either they came from California and they're just living their life because they came here for the mountains and the exploration and those are my people, or they've grown up here, they know nothing else and they don't care about anything else. It's two mm-hmm. two different divides.
Yeah. And it's interesting that is, that's prevalent in a lot of places, you know, a lot of organizations. And I mean, you'll find that, but there are the people out there, I guess you'd say, who are unattached or who are, you know, willing to enter into a friendship, enter into a dialogue and, you know, include you in their, you know, who they are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But there does seem to be a lot of people, you know, I run into that too, as well, that, you know, they have their thing, they have their circle, they have, and it's kind of like, you know, reason I wanted to talk to you is that, you know, there are these people who get set into what they're doing. You know, they don't ever travel, you know, much more than a certain, you know, where they've got the things they do all the time.
Yeah.
And it's becomes a habit. And, that type of thing is something that has always made me. I look at people who are that way, and I was like, I don't want to be them.
You know, it's no. Like,
and you know, it happens at every age. I mean, I see people who are retiring, and you know, they don't know what to do with themselves because their whole life has been work, and now they struggle. You know, and so yeah, So do you have kind of said, I'm not going to be that. What are things that you do to kind of keep yourself out of that mindset, keep yourself flexible and nimble?
I think it's really trying something new all the time. Like I try different things. Like I have, what I do in my mind is if I'm scared to do something, like I have to identify, oh, I'm saying I don't want to do this because I don't know the outcome. Like I'm scared of the outcome. Like once I identify why I say I'm not going to ever try something, it's because I'm usually scared of the outcome. And that's when I actually want to go and try it. So like, of course, like moving, like it's horrifying. Like what's going to happen? It's like, okay, well, just try it because like, who knows? Like who knows what's going to happen? It could be a bad worst case scenario. It could be a good case scenario. You never know. But like, it's definitely those types of people that don't like to get outside of their routine. They don't know any better. Yeah. So like those people, like they really, I feel like they're very afraid of change, but I also feel like their life hasn't really presented itself on how to deal with change, because I think to face stuff, we have to learn how to deal with it. I think, to be honest with you, since this is a running podcast, I deal with change by running. Like I like to run everywhere. And I've realized like, if I'm not comfortable somewhere, it's because I haven't run. Like, I went to New York this week. I was so not comfortable with New York. And then after I ran New York, I was like, oh, this is great. I like New York. But I had to run. So it's almost like finding your coping mechanism, healthy coping mm-hmm. mechanism mm-hmm. to deal with change. And many people are not taught that. They're taught to avoid change. We're a very avoidant society. We avoid anything that makes us uncomfortable. We are almost taught to do that now. We're like, if it doesn't serve you, don't do it. No, if you're uncomfortable, push through it. I bet there's something even better on the other end.
Yes, that's true. And so many people, you know, and I like that. I like running for the same thing. I mean, and I do other things. You know, I decided the way that you make the ampersand when you're writing. For all my life, I did it one way. And it was
interesting.
It was the way I learned it, and it's automatic. And I was like, okay, I need to find things, small things, to change, to keep my mind flexible, to keep. And so I decided that I was going to do a different style, because I think there's at least three different ways you can make the ampersand when you're writing with a pen, you know. And so I chose to. I chose to make the ampersand the way that it is on the keyboard, with a little loopy thing. And
I love it.
And so, but every time I would do it, I'd do it the way that I had been. You know, it was a habit. You know, a lifetime habit. I would oftentimes write it and say, "No, wait a minute, I'm not doing that anymore," and I'd change it.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I look for those types of things to try to keep myself flexible, to not. I mean, it's still, I mean, we have a tendency to fall into habits. I mean, it's just the way we are, you know, part of being human.
Right. And I think it's kind of interesting. Oh, sorry. Get your toy. Toy right here. I think it's kind of interesting. Like, I think one of the most famous things about that, of changing your habits, is change the foot that I don't know why he's barking at me. Stop. You gotta go away.
I can't put you away because you'll just bark all day.
One of the most famous things is change the foot that your pant leg, or change the foot that you put your pants first, right? And it really makes, like, it's just a small thing that really makes an entire difference in your whole day. And I think that's the funniest thing. I love that.
Yeah, because I've been looking for other things, because I've gotten used to that. I have a coffee grinder. I count seconds. And so, you know, it's a little thing. You put the beans in and you push the little button, and you, depending on how long it's in there, it's like a small blender. And so I've always counted seconds, like 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. I'm like, okay, I'm going to change that. So now I use the 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi. And so, you know, and I've gotten used to all of that now. And so I've been looking for something else. I'm like, I will change the pant leg.
Yeah, no, and I think it's just those small changes, they help you cope with change. So you can make bigger changes. Like, if you want to move, you can move. And I personally think everybody needs to move outside their hometown at least once. Like, you can move back to your hometown, but learn how you deal with change. Learn how you deal with new people. I think that's so important. I have a puppy now. And this has changed my whole life. Like, he is now trying to, like, randomly get my attention, because he knows he's training me, right? Where he's like, yes. Oh, she doesn't like noises. He's like, let me be as noisy as possible. He never squeaks his toy. What is he doing right now? It's because I'm not paying attention to him.
Well, it's funny. Yeah. And, you know, we all are creatures of habit. It's like, we have a cat, and
they love habit. They are creatures of habit.
She's a cat. She is more of a. We had two cats, and the we lost one just recently. The one we lost was a lot like a dog. I mean, she was very, just her personality was just. But this cat that remains is all cat, and so you'll open up the door, and she'll stand and look outside, and like, do I want to go outside or not? I think I'll just stand here while you hold the door open for me, you know, and that frustrates me to no end, because, and the cat knows if my wife's holding the door, she can do this. My wife will let her get away with it. I give her like 2 seconds. And so I open up the door.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't go out, I shut it and walk away. And so if she's standing at the door once out, I'll walk out. She will just walk the door. She'll shoot out the door because she knows it's me. But I'll stand there and watch my wife, you know, for 10 seconds, 15 seconds while the cat's making up its mind. And I'm like, the cat knows this. Yeah.
They react differently depending on the person. You've trained it. I love it. I mean, like, but we're the same way, right? Where, yes. You know, if we have a nice boss, we're like, oh, we can be open and ask them a question. If we have a mean boss, we're like, we'll just hide all the problems until it blows up in our face. Like, I feel like that's exactly how human nature is.
Yes. And we're
really
very much,
stop.
Yeah. We're very much that way of being, you know, but you know, on the other hand, you know, habits are good. And the thing that I have found is that I want to have the habits that serve me. And a lot of times the dangerous thing about habits is that they're so habitual. Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. The term is habitual, is that you do it without thinking. And oftentimes you have habits that don't serve you anymore. And so, similar to, you know, living, you know, in that place because you're comfortable and because that, you know, you don't have to think about where you're going. It's, you know, there are so many things that become routine and there's a comfort level there and changing it makes you feel threatened.
Right. And like, you know, I think the biggest thing is people don't, their big thing is like, how am I going to live the life I'm still living? Well, maybe you're not supposed to live the exact same way you've always lived. Maybe you're not supposed to. Like, maybe you're not supposed to go to the grocery store at 7 a.m. every single day just because, like, that's your habit. You can change it up. Like, I think that's the beautiful thing. Like, life is so short. And I think that was another thing that really got me. Like, COVID, like, really lightened it up for a lot of people. Life is short. Go out there, enjoy it, and try new things. Like, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. And it's... Yeah, that's the thing that we have to do if we're not going to get, you know, to get old. I mean, there are people who, you know, are in their 30s and 40s that I look at and it's like, they act old. And I've seen people in their 70s who just like, they're still looking ahead and they're still being flexible, still, you know, out doing things. And so, you know, I don't think that age has more to do with your mindset than it does actually a number of years on your body.
No, I do too. And I mean, like, I even know people my age, they're like such stick in the muds already. I'm like, you guys were 24 and 25. Like, come on. do things that make you happy. All right. We're up here. The puppy's okay. Up here with me.
That is a cute puppy.
Isn't it a cute puppy? Yeah, he's a blue Merle Australian Shepherd. He's in his terrifying puppy stage, but it's okay.
Where he's biting everything, right?
Yeah, he's biting everything. He's trying to get your attention, you know, biting your hands, everything. But it's okay. He's doing good. He's not much of a yipper until he needs my attention.
Yeah. So you've got races coming up. I mean, this will be, I mean, have you been through a winter in Utah yet?
I have not. I'm learning what it's like. Snain? I don't even know, sleet, whatever you call it this morning. It's been raining off and on. Then sometimes we get some snow. It's going to be, I feel like, a hard winter. Of course, I'm a skier. I'll probably ski most of the winter. And then in the spring, I'll really start training for races. I want to do a few. There's some few cute ones like down in Moab, down around Zion in the springtime. And I think that would be fun to do. As far as race season goes, I don't have one signed up yet. I just got done with the 3 back-to-back marathons. I think my body needs a break. It's time for ski season.
Time for ski season.
I agree. Yeah. Ski season, snowshoeing. I like to cross-country ski. So everything like that, I'm going to stay super active. I just don't think I'm going to be running in this. It's miserable to run in. It really is.
Yes. And well, there's, I mean, running in the snow, well, the kind of snow that you would have there would be, you know, that would be a bit of a challenge. I mean, so the ski snow sports would be, it sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, I've lived in Canada. I mean, that's one of the things you talked about moving. I would, you know, we almost moved to the mountains and I would love to, you know, be able to have the winter sports in the mountains. And so,
oh, and it's so great. Yeah.
one of the things I've been trying to do is think about, you know, how to arrange my life so that I can do more, you know, mountain activities. And so,
well, come down to Salt Lake City. I'll show you around.
Well, and that's one of the things I do want to travel more in, because oftentimes it's been summertime when we've traveled. And so, I would love to get out there and to ski. It's been a while, been quite a while since I've been on a pair of skis.
I think my winters are much more mild than yours, though, to be honest with you. I don't think mine are the Midwest winters. I have drier yeah. winters where it's not as cold.
Yeah, Midwest winters are pretty brutal.
Yeah, that's what I hear. And I don't think I could deal with that.
Because we can go from, you know, mid-50s. Well, actually, you know, I've seen it hit 70, 75 degrees in the middle of January and stay that way for several days and then drop down to, you know, zero, you know, within the next.
Yeah.
We get wild swings and wet snow and rain. And I mean, it's just, you never know.
Hey, it was 60 degrees here this morning. It is now like 32. Like mm-hmm. it cooled down in the first 4 hours of the morning. What is that?
But you grew up in New Mexico, so you are a little bit used to the
mountains. No, I thought I was used to it, but like New Mexico is such a different temperament. I personally think New Mexico is like perfect climate. Perfect climate. It's like cold in the winter, but it's not too cold. It is predictable. We don't get a whole lot of like rainy, gross days. It's blue skies all the time, even with like beautiful snow on the ground. And in the summers, it's very mild, around 75 degrees. I personally think New Mexico is like the perfect place to be opposed to here, where here it's like, oh my God, it's so cold, dreary, and gross.
Well, and yeah, I didn't realize that Salt Lake City was, you know, that was that way. I'm more familiar with the winters in Colorado. I have, my sister lives there. And so,
I feel like the winters in Colorado are more like New Mexico. But like, I feel like New Mexico is a bit more sunny than Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that Colorado gets its share. I mean, Colorado is more sunny than Kansas. You know, we have mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, especially in the wintertime, we have a lot of dreary days here. So.
Oh, it's, I think it's a lot more sunny than Kansas. So Midwest being, is cold.
Being in the mountains, are you thinking about running trail races?
Yes, but nothing above. I don't think I could ever do the longer trail races. If I did a longer trail race, it would be like a half marathon. I personally do not want to go into the ultra. I know you love the ultras. Uh-huh. I just don't think I could do it, especially on trails. I'm not much of a distance runner. I'm starting to realize that. I really like fast. Mm-hmm. I like being fast, and that's what road races are. I don't really want that long trail race. So, but I'm going to get into like the 6 and 7 mile ones, because they have some really fun ones up mountains here.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, we, in my group of runners, that's very similar. There are some people, they say, you know, I really don't care about running much more than, you know, 20 miles. And so, you know, I bet they're very fast runners, and that's really their distance. And I'm like, yep, I tell people, run the distance that makes you happy.
Yeah. I mean, I personally think so too. I mean, like, don't knock it till you try it. Like, maybe someday I'll do an ultra. Right now, I just don't have a desire to, because I know how much 26 miles hurts. And I can't imagine that on a trail and then farther.
Well, the thing that roadrunners have to get used to on, you know, when they run trail is that you have to go slower. I mean, your times are always slower, because it's just a different strategy. You know, there's different focus. You know, there's a lot. See, I have the same thing. I've done some crossover training, and I've tried to, just because, you know, I sometimes do run on roads, even, you know, sometimes it may be gravel or
right.
you know, a path or something. I'd never say never. But I wouldn't choose to run on the roads if I could. I prefer trails, but that repetitive motion, you know, you were talking about the running downhill. When I run on roads, it's like, you know, can I have a rock to step over? You know, can I, your foot lands the same way over and over and over. Whereas on a trail, every time your foot comes down, it's a little different angle.
There's new. Yeah.
And so, you know, I prefer that to the repetitive, you know, same surface, same, you know, same motion for hours and hours.
I can definitely see that. I can definitely see that. I just like to get lost where I don't have to worry about if I'm going to trip. I trip so often on trails, like my knees and my hands get so bloody. You know, it's like, oh, okay, let me just run on the roads. It's safer for a clumsy Sierra.
Well, it takes focus.
It does.
That's the thing. There's a mental focus to concentrating on the terrain that is not there on the roads. And I think that's, you know, for me, that's the thing I like, because it requires that kind of mental attention to where your feet are at almost all the time.
All the time.
And so when I get into the road, it's I don't have that stimulation, and it's like, oh my goodness.
It's so true.
But so what do you say you don't haven't signed up for any races? Do you have any in mind? Do you have like a goal race that you're like, oh, I mean, you were going after Boston, and
yeah,
that's kind of been a long, frustrating story.
Honestly, I just kind of feel like I don't care about Boston anymore. It's so sad to say, like, I just don't care. I personally want to do another race. Like, I just want to do like a marathon to get better at, right? Where I feel like marathon distance is the most challenging. I want to do a few halves. I think my only problem is everything's just getting so expensive. So I just don't really, I haven't wanted to sign up for these half marathons because they're like $120. I'm not going to do that for a half marathon's
$120.
Yeah, they're getting expensive. And so like in my mind, I'm just like, I can run a half by myself. The marathons is what I'll sign up for. I don't have one in mind yet. Okay. I have to start looking. Again, I just did New York like 2 days ago. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, let me like recover. And then I'll start looking for a new race. So probably I want something in like March or April. I feel like that's a good time to bring myself back into the marathon training and get back into it. I just want to give myself like a month or two break, try to adapt to this cold weather, and then hit the ground running.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get you into some, you know, 50s or 100s, 100-mile races for that kind of price.
Right? So. I'm telling you, like, it's like for a half marathon, I'm not going to do that. And like, I don't sign up for 5Ks. I don't do that. And it sounds horrible, but I do it like by miles. So like these 5Ks are getting to like the 30s, 40s, and $50. Like that's almost over $10 a mile. Like I can go do that right out there and I'll be right back for free. So.
So have you ever run a 5K?
I have. I've run quite a few of them, but I just can't sign up for them now. I just don't want to. I don't know.
Yeah, because if you're into speed, that's kind of a distance that a lot of speed.
See, like I'm like a distance speed. I don't have the sprinting speed that you really need for a 5K. Those are really challenging. I'm like more of a 10K half marathon person. I really like 15Ks. I think that's a really nice distance to really challenge yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's still too short.
I know for you ultra runners, but like, I like the speed. I like to see how long I can hold up a certain pace. Whereas like ultra, I peter out so fast.
Yeah. Yeah, the ultra is different. I mean, my average speed is suited for ultra because I'm not, I have a speed I can maintain for a long time and I train at that speed, and that's kind of what I do. When I get into a shorter race, even a 50K, a lot of times it's like, I don't go fast enough to really, make the volunteers happy. It's like, okay, we had to wait an extra extra time because you're the very last person across the finish line.
Oh man, you know what? I think no matter what you're doing, as long as you're out there having fun, it's a good race.
Yeah. That's and most of the volunteers have never made me feel that way. But it's just, you get to be self-conscious and
absolutely.
Runners who have that DFL designation behind them is like, yeah.
Yep. This is true.
Yeah. Well, Sierra, how can people find you? And tell me kind of a little bit what you are still working as a coach. So tell me kind of who your clients are and what you do to help them.
Yeah. So I work in mental health and physical coaching. So fitness coaching, physical coaching, and you can find me at Run, Thrive, Survive on the website, on my Instagram, my TikTok, YouTube, anywhere you can find me, Run, Thrive, Survive. I will be there. My name's Sierra and I'm here to help you mentally and physically kind of untangle the thoughts and emotions around running, around fitness, around eating, whatever it is, we can work together.
Great. Great. Before you go, I have the bridge questions.
Who approacheth the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, bridge keeper. I'm not afraid.
So what is your most important piece of gear that you have to have when you're...
My headphones. I know there's a few races that don't allow you to have headphones. I'm such a music person. I'm such a podcast person. I have to have my headphones.
Okay. So what do I'll do a follow-up question to that. Then what do the headphones do for you? What's the advantage to you for wearing
it? It really helps me not get so much into my own mind. Like, right. Running is so mental. The minute you're just overthinking everything is the minute you want to quit. Like when I can get into some music or a podcast, I get lost. My brain kind of goes off into like Wonderland and it's so much easier to run.
Okay. That's good. Okay. Second question is, what is the strangest thing that you've seen while you've been out running?
Oh, ooh, I like that one. Let me think that one through. Okay, so strangest thing I've seen. You know what? I'm going to go with this one because it was kind of creepy. So I was running on this trail out here in Utah and there was this guy. It was 80 degrees. Okay, it was 6 in the morning, 80 degrees. The sun was just rising and this guy is riding his bike as fast as he can in a black ski mask, black jacket, black leather gloves, black pants, and he's just riding as fast as he can. And I saw him pass me twice. Now I'm on a trail that's right next to like a river where there's nobody around. So like the first thing I think of is it's always the runner that finds the dead body. And I personally have never like recovered from that. I'm like, that is so creepy. What was this guy doing at 80? Like this jacket was a ski jacket. It wasn't like it's a light jacket because I'm on a bike and it's chilly out. It was hot that day. It was 80 degrees. There was no reason for a ski jacket, a ski mask, and like goggles. Like it was just weird. That was odd.
that is creepy. Scary. Okay. Third question. What is a word or phrase that sums up your philosophy of life?
Run your life. Just yes. Take everything you do with your life. Just make sure that you can make your own choices that guide you the way you want to go. I always say like run your life before life runs you, because if you don't make a plan, if you don't get up and try every single day, you're going to let life take over. And sometimes you don't like where you end up.
That's great. Well, and you ended up in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, so, there you go. And we'll see where I go from here.
That may not be your final destination. You may decide that you want to go somewhere
else. Right. You never know. Like I'm not sitting here planted. I didn't buy a house. Like I can still go wherever I want to.
Well, and you can always sell a house if you have a house. So
there you go. That too. Best market to sell in.
Well, it's kind of funny because every house that my wife and I have purchased, tell my story. We've purchased every house we've purchased. She has, and we've rehabbed them extensively, but she has always looked at it as like, when we sell this house, I want to make sure that, I'm doing something that will make, that whatever we're doing to repair it is going to make it more sellable.
Interesting.
From the time we move in, she is looking toward the fact that we're going to sell this house eventually. And, we need to make sure that what we do is going to be marketable.
I like that. You don't have that mindset of this is the forever home. I feel like so many people get stuck in this is my forever home. And I guess I don't want that myself yet.
Yeah. Yeah. But she asked me, we rebuilt the house. The house we're in, we rebuilt it. I mean, tore out walls, tore out floors, tore out windows. I mean, and she asked me a couple of years ago, she said, would you do another remodel like this? And I'm sure.
I love it.
I'd be glad to go and do it again.
Awesome.
We're not tied to this house that way. So
always keep improving.
That's right. That's right. Hey, Sierra, thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me back on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there. More information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. I have my online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do know somebody who might like it, take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.